Actor, top 50 podcaster, award-winning filmmaker, and rabid sports fanatic Michael Rappaport shares the story of his on- and off-court obsessions and sets the world straight on the greatest and downright worst athletes, coaches, and hair pieces of all time. He does so in his new book called This Book Has Balls, Sports Rants from the MVP of Talking Trash. It is a great pleasure to welcome Michael Rappaport to the roundtable this morning. Michael, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you here. I'm a big fan of your work. I'm a big fan of not only the acting, but of the ranting. How did you start down the road of ranting and having people listen to what you had to say about it?
It just sort of happened. You know, I've always been an outspoken person. I've always been a little bit disruptive wherever I've been, whether it's school or in life. And as far as the rant specifically that sort of inspired This Book Has Balls, I just sort of by happenstance, you know, found myself as a voice in sports. I'm a huge sports fan, and I would get invited to on all the sports talk shows and do my thing and talk my talk. And then they kept inviting me back, and I'm just a huge fan. You know, it was never anything planned or thought out. I'm just a real, grew up wanting to be an athlete, tremendous fan of, you know, basketball, football, and just the culture of professional sports. And it just sort of happened. And This Book Has Balls seemed like the perfect way to sort of articulate all my, my thoughts, feelings, things I love, things I don't like, things that frustrate me, and so forth and so on. And, I'm happy with the way it turned out.
It seems as though in reading the book that basketball was your first love. That was the sport that got you.
Basketball was my first love. I mean, you know, before I decided to be a professional basketball player, or that was my plan, I loved all the sports. But basketball was definitely like, you know, the thing that you know, took my heart. And, you know, as a 9-year-old, I you know, planned to be in the NBA and lived my life accordingly. And ultimately, obviously, my hoop dreams turned into hoop nightmares. But everything that I learned from playing ball and the competitiveness and the camaraderie of it and the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat really informed who I am today. And I took that competitive drive and competitive nature into when I eventually became an actor.
So when it comes to the current state of the NBA right now, what do you make of it? Do you think basketball is at its best right now?
That's a good question. I don't know if it's at its best. I think it's thriving. I think there's a lot of great players. They have a good mix of veterans, guys that have, you know, in the league for 4 or 5 years, and a bunch of young talent. So I don't know if it'll ever meet the Magic and Larry days of the 80s, or the Michael Jordan era, or the Kobe, Iverson, Shaq, you know, Tracy McGrady, Vince Carter era of the early 2000s. But it's great now. I think it'll continue to grow. It's a global game, and you have players from all over the world. I'm a fan. I'm always going to be a fan. You know, I'm a critic. You know, also, like, there's things I don't like, things that frustrate me, but the game itself is still great, and it's still beautiful to watch.
Knicks fan, correct?
Knicks fan, yes. Disgruntled, frustrated, heartbroken Knicks fan. But yes, Knicks fan. But you got to put those little adjectives in before you say Knicks fan at this point. You can't just say Knicks fan, because there's always, you know, you always have to, you know, give a little up to sort of explain it.
Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to football, football's having a rough time right now. What do you make of it?
I think that's a myth. You know, the beginning of the NFL season, every single year, the ratings aren't the same. They're beginning to pick up. They always pick up. By Super Bowl Sunday, the whole country will be watching. I think that's some vindictive, sort of thing that the President of the United States hopes to manipulate, you know, the country into believing, so he could, you know, give this idea that he's some flag loving, non draft dodging person that we all know that he actually is. So I think he's just continuing his manipulative ways. He's a draft dodger and a liar and a con man, and he's trying to do that as the President of the United States, and it's disgusting. And the players have a right to protest. It's a peaceful protest, and protests are not supposed to be comfortable. and this whole idea of sports and politics and separating them, we wouldn't have Muhammad Ali be, you know, the world's most famous athlete while he was living. Sports and politics have always, you know, crossed each other, and they should. Whether it's, you know, the New York Yankees pushing for a World Series post 9/11, and everybody finding a safe haven at Yankee Stadium, or the players kneeling. It's not going to always be comfortable for everybody, and change isn't comfortable. And bringing some of the countries and things that aren't perfect are hard to deal with and hard to swallow. The game of football has been great. It's been a great season. It's going to continue to be great. And, you know, it's business as usual with the NFL. I think that's all just manipulative behavior from the president.
I don't know that it matters, but do you believe that baseball is still America's pastime?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think, yeah, why wouldn't it be? You know, everybody was glued to their TV to watch, you know, the World Series. It had iconic games. The ratings for that were fantastic. So, yeah, I mean, it's always going to be that. You can't just change things. You know, I talk about that in the Garden. You know, I mean, I talk about that in the book. I talk about that with Madison Square Garden. We talk about it being the world's most famous arena. And people are like, well, how could it be the world's most famous arena when the Knicks aren't winning? I'm like, yo, you can't change history. It is the world's most famous arena. It's the only arena in the NBA that has all its history intact. There's no more Boston Garden. There's no more Fabulous Forum. There's no more Chicago Stadium. And although the Knicks have sucked and been frustrating, the Madison Square Garden is still the Mecca, and basketball will always reign supreme in New York. Like, you can't just take these titles away because, you know, there's a Twitter poll or they, you know, talk about it on ESPN. You know, like, history is history. And, you know, why wouldn't baseball continue to be America's pastime?
Well, let's talk about that, though, for a second. You mentioned Madison Square Garden. If you replace the Garden with another building that you call the Garden, does that change the experience for you at all?
It changed the experience for everybody. You know, there's something about that place, the history. It's the same building that Ali fought Frazier in 1971 for 15 brutal rounds. It's the same building that Frank Sinatra sold out. It's the same building that the Iron Sheik was dethroned by Hulk Hogan. If you did change the actual building, it would change a lot. You could feel it in the air. You could feel it in the rafters. And although it's been, you know, a little bit refurbished, it still has all its history intact since 1969. And that means something. That stands for something. And whether you're a New Yorker or not, when you go into Madison Square Garden, you feel you feel what's special about it.
So the big knock on sports, you know this, is that every sport, most sports at least, have become just too damn expensive. You can't bring the family to go see a game, of whether it's an NBA game, an NFL game, or Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that? What do you think that the sports can do to change that, or do you believe it doesn't matter?
I believe it does matter. I think there's, you know, I'm not a businessman. I'm a talker of trash. But, you know, I think it does matter. I think that they have to find a way to split the difference and find certain games or certain times of games or certain sections of the arena, you know, to make it family friendly. Because at the end of the day, you know, sports is for everybody. You know, we've all played it, whether it's, you know, second grade kickball or seventh grade, you know, girls softball. You know, and I think that the beauty of sports is that because 99% of us learned about sports, fell in love with sports when we're kids, and I think that's the thing that stays with us when we're grown-ups and why we still get addicted and attached and scream and yell, and people go, you're acting like a crazy person, you're acting like a kid, because I think it's like a genetic DNA thing. You know, it brings you back to your childhood, and you love who you love, you hate who you hate. I think that, you know, in regards to loving who you love and hating you hate, in regards to sports, it's one of the only safe places where you can truly love somebody and truly hate somebody in a sort of safe space, because it's just sports. And at the end of the day, that thrill of victory and that agony of defeat is what we all keep coming back for, whether it's horse racing or the NBA Finals.
You mentioned just a moment ago of being a trash talker, and the subtitle of the book is Sports Rants from the MVP of Talking Trash.
Correct.
What does talking trash, do you believe? What do you believe it accomplishes?
I think it just it's like if you have a steak and it's all the seasoning and the steak sauce and the flavor of it. You know, it's part of the culture of sports. It's certainly a part of the culture of New York in general. We like to break balls. You know, sometimes you're the giver, sometimes you're the receiver. And I think in sports, it's just part of it. You know, your adrenaline is going. It's so competitive, and I think that it's just the way it is. And I think that talking trash in general, as long as it's, you know, I mean, I like to bring it close to the line, but as long as it's, you know, with a good spirit to it, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. You know, when in terms of comedy and you know, just growing up around your friends, whether you're at the game, going to the game, or actually playing the game, that's just the way, particularly, you know, boys and then young men and then men, that's a lot of times the way we communicate. It's a sign of affection as far as I'm concerned. Like in my book, I don't talk trash. Even when I go hard on certain people, I don't talk trash on any lames. I don't have any chapters dedicated to the current Utah Jazz. You know, I give it to the best, you know what I mean? Because you know, like growing up as a sports fan, you know, Michael Jordan, everybody wanted to be like Mike. As a Knicks fan, I didn't want to be like Mike. I wanted to bury Mike. You know what I mean? Like I wanted to kick his butt. So it's not like it's sort of like a sign of respect if you go at somebody.
Well, I got to give you credit on first of all, you have the best index in all of books.
Thank you. Please give me the credit where credit is due. Thank you very much.
It is the greatest index I have ever seen. I've spent my life with books. This is the greatest index of all time. People should buy the book just for the index.
Hell yeah. I like that. You want me to explain what it is?
Yeah.
Well, because, you know, it's a trash-talking book. And although I'm keeping my language intact here, you know, there's a lot of F words and they're all over the place. So we decided to have the F word index, and it's very, very thorough. It's very detailed. And it was funny to read in the audiobook because I narrate the audiobook. And like I had to do, normally you wouldn't do an index in an audiobook, or I don't see any reason why you would do that. But to go over like all the versions and ways we used F, you know, to describe something or punctuate something or, you know, there's so many different variations. Doing the audiobook reading of the F word index, you could hear me laughing because I was like, this is crazy. This is, you know, it's crazy. But, you know, that's the thing with the book. You know, the book is an escape. It's fun. You know, I think there's some heart in it. You know, there's a lot of sentimental, there's a few sentimental chapters in it. Namely, like, you know, my stuff with my father and, you know, our personal relationship with Muhammad Ali, although we never met him. I met him one time in my life. But at the end of the day, it really is just a trash-talking extravaganza, a celebration of, you know, things I love, things that drive me crazy in sports. And, you know, I'm really proud of it, and I'm glad that we got it done. It was definitely a challenge, but I'm very proud of it.
The book is a lot of fun, and you read it and you see it, and it's very amusing, and it does have heart. I have to say, I was reading this book as I was also watching your show, which is now on Netflix, called Atypical.
Mm-hmm.
What a beautiful show. That is a lovely, lovely program. You have to be immensely proud by that show.
I'm very proud of Atypical. It definitely resonated with a lot of people. It's on Netflix. It's starring Jennifer Jason Leigh and myself in a really good young cast. And it's about a dysfunctional family, you know, dealing with, you know, raising our two kids, one of whom is autistic. And it's got a sense of humor, but it's got a lot of heart. And we got picked up for season two. And I'm very proud of it. You know, it was fun to make. And I'm looking forward to jumping back into it. It's definitely, you know, it's funny because now that I sort of have this persona, you know, in sports and, you know, my sports persona, you know, it's a version of myself because people start to think that I'm screaming, yelling, cursing, maniac 24/7. And I might be like 22 hours a day, but I do take 2 hours off. But, you know, Atypical, like some people that are not familiar with that, they were like, you know, so impressed with the character because, like, the character is so sweet and loving. I'm like, I'm not a, you know, total animal all the time. So, you know, I'm happy with, you know, the things I'm getting, you know, getting the opportunity to do now, and I just want to continue, you know, trying to do my thing and have a good time and you know, improve with my, you know, my opportunities.
Well, that's the point I was making in the question, because you watch that show, and when you come off as the calm in the storm, well, that's just great.
Right. No, it's funny. Yeah, it's definitely funny, because it's compared to, like, you know, the book and the trash talking, that character is very sweet or sort of repressed in a way. Like, he's very mild mannered and, you know, it's hard to sort of get emotion out of him. And me certainly is the opposite, because if I'm good at one thing, it's articulating my emotions, whether it's happiness or sort of frustration.
The name of the book, This Book Has Balls, Sports Rants from the MVP of Talking Trash. The book is out. It's published by Touchstone. Michael, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much.
Hey, I appreciate the time. I appreciate you taking the time to read the book and check out Atypical, and thank you for the support. It means a lot.
Indeed. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Again, Michael Rappaport is the author of This Book Has Balls. It is published by Touchstone. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.